Welcome to Electric Evolution with Liz Allen. This podcast is about the journey to a more sustainable future in order for us to be able to do our bit to achieve net zero. I'll be discussing a variety of topics with experts in their field in order to educate and increase our knowledge of clean energy, electric vehicles, and the electric vehicle infrastructure. So whether you're an individual wanting to make a difference at home, a small business, or a corporate, this podcast is just for you. On today's podcast, I have got Mark Pearce, and he's the Mobility Analytics Team Leader at Hydroc. So we met a couple of months ago, didn't we, at the EV Cafe Partners Day, and lovely to see you again, Mark. Nice to meet you again.
Yes, pleasure to meet you again. It's been too long in instances. So we've had one attempt at this, haven't we? But I didn't quite get a plan. So
yes, you do have small children, haven't you? So these things, these things are more important than podcasts, of course. But I'm not saying that for the listeners or the watchers. So keep watching and listening. Thank you. But listen, so Hydroc, for a start off, remind me whereabouts you're based.
So I'm based in Cornwall. That's one of our offices all across the country and across the world, actually. We've got one in New Zealand as well, but our main office is in Bristol, so southwest focus, and then and also a northern arm based in sort of Manchester, specifically with transportation, but we've got offices in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Newcastle. I won't go through them all. Loads of them. So
now remind me, whereabouts in Cornwall are you? Because I know that was somewhere where we both spoke about, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we're based in Truro. We used to be based in Camborne, but we are based in Truro now. So we moved about 12 months ago. It's been great. I mean, living in Cornwall and being in this kind of industry is a really interesting sort of comparison in terms of, you know, looking at EV vehicles and how people are using them on holiday versus how they used to commute, and you kind of get best of both worlds here, which is really interesting. So I'm jumping the gun a bit and jumping into the content, but it's always good. This stuff, when you talk to EV people, you get the same sort of resonance, that sort of excitement in people, and it's really good, especially on the EV Cafe Day where we met. It was really good to hear people's different opinions and that based their opinions based on their local knowledge or their national knowledge on that kind of thing, which was really good.
It was a really good day. So just to explain a little bit about what Hydroc do, if you will.
Yeah, so Hydroc's an engineering consultancy and a sustainability consultancy as well. So we have many different arms. We cover all the standard engineering practices, things like structures, civils, all of that. So two sort of key flagships and what I'm related to are transportation and smart energy and sustainability, so SES as we call them. Mm-hmm. So they deal with how do you power a site? We deal with the transport demand element of that site. So when you're talking about EVs, how much power do people need? When do they want it? How do they want it? All that kind of stuff. And to that point, we've developed this tool called StratEV, which then goes into the detail in terms of how people want to charge at a particular site or a particular location, and mainly about the particular type, but also what kind of people they are. So we look at the behavioral aspects in terms of how do they charge. Do they want that quick charge, that quick top up, or are they someone who's going to drop it right down to the red line, get right down to the sort of 10% battery remaining, and then plug in and want the full charge? So, you know, we deal with all those kind of behaviors, and then we can map out what that looks like in terms of energy use, and then we can map that against what grid capacity we've got, and then we provide a whole suite of engineering solutions behind that to basically match the demand with the power requirement. So especially as we get into this more and more, and there's a lot of news stories around it at the moment about the grid capacity is not where it might want to be in some locations, we're able to resolve those issues or try and find the economical way to do it. So sometimes it's whacking the battery, sometimes it's putting on site generation, sometimes it's using stuff like hydrogen or CNG. So when we worked out in the States and things like that, that's what we've been looking at.
Just talk to me a little bit about if you're saying that you're dealing with transportation and power, does that mean that the customers that you're working with are kind of local authorities, or are they more private sector companies? Whereabouts do they fit, your customers?
Yeah, so both really a lot of the answers are different though, and the great thing about the tool is the fact that it is you can manipulate it, and the fact that it's ours, we can all edit it as well. So with the private clients, what they're interested in is, you know, the revenue side, but not necessarily from the charging point of view. So for example, working with a hotel chain, what they're interested in is not having an EV charging point going to have an effect on my room sales? Because that's what they're what they're interested in.
Yeah.
So we basically modify the tool to be able to say, okay, well, actually, if you didn't put in EV charging, this is what you might lose, especially if you're a competitor, put in some, and then vice versa. When if you do put in some in the right type, this is the benefits it can bring. Local authorities are slightly different. So local authorities aren't necessarily interested in the income. I mean, they'll tell you, know, people will know they are. But realistically, you know, they do have other aims, and a lot of that is to do with residential charging, where it's not available. So off street residential charging for people who don't have independent off street, so driveways and things like that, or whether it's in undercover, like, so if you can't install an undercover car parking because of fire risks or to structural load or things like that, then they offer alternatives, and they're funded through government. Generally, so everyone will be aware of the Levi Fund, I'm sure, but all of that kind of stuff. So we worked with a few people on that element as well.
Okay. So it's mostly kind of private organisations that you're working with. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably like 70-30. Okay. Can't do math. That's a good way to start an engineering conversation.
It's Monday. Hey.
It is Monday. So yeah.
I've got somebody else's teeth in today. So I noticed on your website, so data centers, defense, education, energy, healthcare, industrial, later living and logistics. That's a real broad kind of number of organization or sectors that you're dealing with. But I'm just thinking about it now. If we're looking at EV charging, they all need it, don't they? At some point.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've done things through churches, so religious sites, to the nuclear power stations, it all covers that sort of one banner under EV charging, because it's someone's place of work or it's someone's home. And especially as we move to this model, and funnily enough, we're having a conversation about this earlier on, but it was around that model of, if people are charging at home or at work, there's no need to go to a petrol filling station, for example. So what does that mean for them, and all of that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of this conversation around how this change, in terms of the fact that you no longer need to be specialist to provide fuel, because fuel is now energy, which everyone has access to.
Yeah.
How does that change how things can be more convenient? And I think something that's missed necessarily with EVs is that it can be a lot more convenient if it's planned correctly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you might not need to be a specialist, but you do need to kind of know your stuff to kind of work, I suppose, working with the grid and making sure that the grid connections are there and everything like that. But do you work with the charge point operators as well, you know, or do you provide the data to them to kind of, so that they know exactly where they need to put the charge points in?
Yeah, so we work with them more in a hand-in-hand sort of site-by-site approach, or portfolio approach, but more hand-in-hand with them. I mean, if your CPOs are interested, we quite often have. So what we do is, for our clients, is generally we'll talk to them. And if they're coming to us directly from a CPO, we can put all the CPO's equipment into our tool and say, okay, well, that's what happens if you use the CPO's equipment. If they're an independent client and they want to, what we want to do is try and create a lot of relationships with CPOs, because then we can recommend a full market choice. Because if we're not aware of a certain product that might sit a certain client's bill, we don't know, we can't cross sell that. So it's we kind of work with them in a sort of handholding basis. But what we want to remain agnostic, and the reason being is because what we want is the best for the end client, but also the consumer. It's a really key point that we want to see, you know, who's actually plugging in that energy, who's using that energy, and is it convenient for them? because that's the whole aim of this, around, you know, net zero and, you know, all this infrastructure. If we get it wrong, and it's inconvenient, it's no, there's no loyalty to EV for a lot of people. They will only go for it if it's more convenient. And I think that, well, not, I'm not saying more, but certainly not as perceived as less inconvenient than a petrol car. So it's less convenient, sorry. So yeah, the I think that's a lot of the challenges around it is around that perception, and also the reality, I think, that some people don't want to change their behaviors or don't want to, or feel like they can't. They, you know, you talk about this planning trips, some people don't plan their trips, their spontaneity is of a character where it's, they don't want to do that. They want to be able to pick up their car and travel to Glasgow if they want to, or feel like they need to. And rightly or wrongly, there are people like that. And it's, again, it's about planning out infrastructure, planning out, you know, how do we accommodate those vehicles, and how do we accommodate the dwell time that's needed to charge a car? Because even if you talk 10 minutes, that's still 10 times as long as it takes anyone to fill up a petrol car. So, because generally people will be done in 1 to 2 minutes.
Yeah, but you still got to pay, haven't you, afterwards? And then you'll go and get your packet of Jaffa cakes in the thing when you're going in. Or even if you actually have to, even if you have to pay at pump, it's still probably, what, 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, so actually we've measured it on time, because we did one in we did an Asda PFS petrol filling station, and it's surprisingly short. It's like 2 to 3 minutes on average, because you get people that like blitz in and then you and just drive out really quickly, and then you get people who stay for that a bit longer and go into the shop and buy stuff and things like that. So it averages out, but it's what's interesting is that it's, you know, because you take the payment window still applies to the EV. You still, and you've got to get the cable out of your car, plug the cable in one side, plug the cable in another, go through the app or whatever if it is an app based one, or contactless if it's contactless, and how you do that. And even then, when you've got to that stage, even with 150 kilowatt charger, you're still, you're not going to fill up from naught to, you know, 100 in that time frame. And I think there's that, but that's not a problem if everything is planned correctly, because the great thing about it is the fact that you can do something different. You don't have to sit there and drink a coffee and sit in your car at a motorway services anymore. There's a country park that's located 5 minutes down the road. You can go in and have a proper cup of coffee, because you know you're going to be sat there for 20 more minutes. Or you can plan out your destination charging much better, in terms of like, okay, well, I'm going to stop for lunch. Because, I mean, generally, I mean, how much time physically on, and, you know, driving the speed limit, doing anything properly, will it take you to eat up a range of a 200 mile car? You know, this is the sort of balance, and this is what we really excel at, I think, is sort of like getting people to understand that balance, and really talk about the what do the people want.
There is that, and like, you know, I always talk about the voice of the customer is listening to what they want, but what they also need to understand, in my mind, is that actually times change. The cars that you're getting, you know, they are going to be running on kind of, you know, hopefully on renewables as well, aren't they? You know, you're going to have a lot less pollution in towns and cities. You're not going to be poisoning everybody as you're driving around. The biggest thing is, you know, it's like Reading. Reading's always got with gridlock around Reading, where I live, is just always shocking. We've got two main bridges, the one that's near us, which is called the Caversham Bridge, and then we've got the Reading Bridge, and it's always bumper to bumper on there, you know, kind of first thing in the morning, lunchtime, you know, kind of in the evenings as well. I mean, that's the biggest behaviour change, isn't it, to try and stop people from just driving all the time, you know?
Yeah, and that's really the key part of what our transport planning arm do. I mean, in terms of so we talk about like the EV and the energy use and the practical engineering side of that, but they're dealing with the policy in terms of like, how do we get people out of the car? Like, fundamentally, that's the goal. Now, practical in some locations and not practical in others. I mean, Reading is a city; it's got a fairly good public transport network.
It's town. A town still.
Is it?
No, I know. They never allowed us to be a. Yeah, we've got a cathedral, but it's too old, so they won't let us be a city.
Yeah, Truro is a city, which I love because it's like probably one third the size of one quarter of Reading. So Reading city centre. It's absolutely minuscule, but it's fun because you get to know everyone. Reading as a town, it's got reasonably good power. Public transport infrastructure, and you've got connections straight into London, and it's like people feel like we are built in a very car-centric culture. We're not as the Netherlands have got it down, but we're not as bad as the Americans, let's say, in terms of being very, very car-centric. But we are still very fixated on owning a car, having a car, and part of the business we do is autonomous vehicles and modelling of those. And some really fun stuff there. But mobility as a service, or MaaS as it's called. So if you have an Uber, but it didn't have a driver, and it didn't cost, everyone had access to an Uber and it didn't have a driver and it didn't cost as much. So if you paid £1.88 for your journey, do you need to own a car? If they're always available, always around, and always access to you, do you need to own a car? Now that is like future talking, but
I've just heard on the news this morning that there are, I can't remember whereabouts it was, but there was an autonomous bus that's just been released somewhere in the country, but so it's not got a driver because it's autonomous, but there is somebody who's there just in case that they call a captain now.
So the bus was implemented, I think it's somewhere near Scotland. And what I really like the idea of is the return of the conductor, because one thing we sort of miss out now on public transport is that customer service interface. And I think actually something that could return as part of an autonomous lead is more of that, someone to help people on and off the bus with hold their shopping when they sit down, especially if they're elderly or not as able. And I don't think that's as far-fetched as people may think it may seem. I think if you're looking for those kind of jobs, that's how we can make society better as a whole, because you can still make the service cheaper, but you don't have to make it, bare bones, if you know what I mean. And certainly it could pave the way to, premium bus service versus standard bus service and things like that. So there's a whole load of realm and stuff to talk about in terms of autonomous vehicles. But that's all this kind of stuff that sits under my bracket is the EV and AV and that future transport change, going on into those sorts of into the realm of things. But it is interesting.
I was going to say, just so what do you see as the future of transport then? What would your kind of ideal future be for everybody?
I think. For me, from my perspective, it's about making things as convenient as possible, but also as efficient as possible. Because we, as humans, we're very wasteful currently, just generally with a lot of things, single-use plastics and things like that. And we're on that sort of trend to try and replace those things. But you're looking at the big corporations who deal with this sort of thing to understand the differences, the changes that they need to make, and in a global scale. And I think in terms of the transport has a key future to play in that because of the way that it's sort of structured. And this is why there's a big conversation about lithium and batteries at the moment, and it's very topical for Cornwall, because Cornish Lithium are a company set up to mine lithium out of Cornwall, sort of synthetically get lithium out of Cornwall somehow. They are way smarter than I could ever be, so I'm going to leave them to deal with that problem. But basically they are so they are looking at the lithium side of things. But then you've got, I think in Japan, I want to say it's Japan, they're looking at sodium-based batteries and things like that. And it's like, it's again, changing what the materials are made out of to try and make the batteries as sustainable as possible, because you don't want to be just digging one thing out the ground and then digging another thing out the ground that's the same. And it just causes a bit of an issue. You're almost kicking the can down the road. Although you are reducing tailpipe emissions, you're then starting up a whole new industry in mining, and you're kind of like, okay, well, how efficient is that? So
effect, hasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So it's you're creating efficiencies, but you're not reducing it to zero. And I think if you're looking for that idealistic scenario, it's where, you know, it's where we everything's reusable and everything's convenient and everything is usable. And I think, you know, autonomous has a big part to play in that, although we're a way away from it in terms of, you know, fully being accessible. I mean, drone flight has a big part to play in that, because you're not so restricted by space of road. You're looking at, you know, 3D. And then you're also looking at things like technology advances, and all that kind of stuff, and all the stuff they're working on. I mean, you know, electric air travel is going to be a complete game changer in terms of that. And I know Rolls Royce are working on a. Someone definitely was. I think someone has definitely been working on electric prop aircraft, at least anyway. I don't know if they've got a jet equivalent, if you will. I don't think that's a technical term, but it's also, again, it's about, you know, taking baby steps, and there's a big push, and this is a slight side tangent, but the there's a big push in the company at the moment to talk about reducing air travel, sort of national air travel, just generally, and also international, and to that effect they give everyone in the company an extra day if they go on holiday using sustainable modes, if you use a train, if you don't fly, which is really good, excellent by and Hydrock are really pushing the sustainability stuff, not just for our clients but also for us, you know, the employees.
That's
as well
good. yeah
it is. Until you realise that you try and catch a train from Cornwall to Birmingham, or to Manchester, sorry, and it's going to cost you about £380, and it's going to take you 8 hours, or you can spend £115 and you can get on a flight and be there in 45 minutes. And you're kind of like, so the unpopular opinion I have around that is that it's not a case of banning flights or getting rid of them. It's about educating the airline industry that the passengers want this. Pushing it forward, and I think that's really the fundamentals around it, is that, you know, they're really going to break air travel when then if they break air travel, that can really make sense, because, you know, transport is made up of those, you know, five or six modes. And
I think that's really important, isn't it, air travel. So from what I remember, I think DHL have got an electric plane that they're actually using for I'm not sure what the range is, but I've seen something with, I'm sure it was DHL, with kind of on the side, and I've seen that in one of the kind of newsletters that kind of come in, and it was a few months ago, but I don't know really much about it. But air travel is you, like you say, you can't just expect everybody to stop flying.
No.
I said this to my husband, and you probably remember what my husband does, you know, with climate change. If you stop air travel, then you're shutting a whole industry down, and that will just have a massive big knock-on effect on other things like industry, income in various countries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's not a doable one. It is about getting industry or the airline industry, like you say, to look at alternative methods that actually emit less carbon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to make Paul Kirby smile now out of BB Cafe, because the one critical thing to a lot of that is sort of decarbonizing airports themselves, because they're big energy users, massive energy users, and usually quite constrained. And you know, you're telling them that they've got to electrify their entire fleet of vans, support vehicles, all these specialist vehicles that need to be either converted or to be new ones to be purchased that are EV. And it's like it's a challenge for them and all of this and especially for the logistics space and for the vans and a challenge we are ready to head for, you know, we're ready to take sort of head on and make them more efficient and certainly with some of the airports we've spoken to about autonomous as well as electric, so both it's about, you know, how do they, the details of like, do they have an RFID card, because all the people that stock up the planes are not necessarily related to the airline, or they might be related to the airline and they're all different, and all the sort of political side behind it as well you've got to sort of manage. It's like, yeah, all right, this is how we're going to manage this, and this is how we're going to do that, and it all comes back to that sort of understanding the end user, so the end user being, you know, the poor bloke who has to go and plug it in up after he's pushed a plane back or whatever, and understanding what their needs are, and and you know how quickly they need to be back out there and what sort of pressures they'll be under, and making sure that what they can use is convenient and easy for them, and you know, and that, you know, that just stems out to the public as well. So
So we were talking before we started recording about the, again, about the education piece, weren't we, and trying to change people's minds, who especially people who are in the national press or on TV. One specific person we were talking about was Jeremy Clarkson, wasn't it? Now, now I found an item, an article on a website saying that he'd found an EV that he liked because he thought originally that they were quite dreadful, didn't he? So he's found a Ford F-150 pickup truck that apparently he likes. But, you know, how do we... Because we've got, on the other side, we've got James May, who's an advocate. We were talking about that, weren't we? He's an advocate for EVs. But how do you see us actually persuading the Jeremy Clarksons of this world to keep it to the UK, of the UK, you know, to actually move to electric? How do we do that?
Yeah, and it is a tall ask, and but I mean, critically, it's around, we talked about that convenience piece and talked about how we can make it easy for people if they don't have to then go to a filling station or something where they can charge at their destination, however long they're going to be there for, at the right rate, which is, again, linking back to the OEMs to make sure the cars are capable of charging rapidly if you want a rapid car, rapid charging car. And again, if it's a slow, you know, you can have the ability to charge slowly and conveniently if you're residential as well. And I think there's a big piece around, you know, if you don't have a driveway or if you don't have that, you are going to, you know, it's a bit of a strange one where you're theoretically going to be paying more for energy because you're paying it through a, you know, a charging point operator or, you know, destination charging rather than just off your own house, as you would a standard operator. And I think that's a hard sell for people who feel, especially over recent times, that and rightly so in some opinions, where they're hard done by, and you know, people are hard up on cash at the moment, and trying to convince them to buy a 60 grand car that's going to you know, not fulfill everything they need it to do because of A, the current infrastructure, and B, they don't have access to that infrastructure, is just not really going to fly. And I think what we really need now is that strategy in terms of how do we get those people who see the negative side of EV and don't necessarily see the positive to convert. And I think a lot of that's being done at the moment through media. I mean, EV Cafe, again, I keep on saying their name, but it's, you know, for a good reason. They are, you know, they're big advocates, a big vocal, you know, a big sort of voice in terms of the industry, in terms of what we think is going to happen, and joining the dots and talking about, you know, talking about the negatives, but also then explaining the positives, and really when talking about those negatives, talking about how you can overcome those. But again, it's around, when from my perspective, it's about catering for everyone. It's about understanding, so local authorities, for example, you've got to think of how people are going to use those charging points. It's not a numbers game. It's not like, oh, we've put in 20 charges this year, great, but no one's using them, so that's a complete waste of time and energy. Yeah, exactly, and money, and also, you know, and it can be very easy. I mean, a lot of people, they'll go in and you've got these, you know, they'll be lined up and they'll say they're educated, and then they'll put in 7 kilowatt charges in a location where you're just thinking, but people only spend 15 minutes there. 7 kilowatt isn't going to charge anything in the 15 minutes you're there. I saw a brilliant one the other day, and I won't say where it is because it will outline where it I don't want people going to it, but it was allowed an hour's worth of parking before you are, you know, exceeding the limit, and the charger was 7.4 kilowatts. So if you're talking about 70 kilowatt battery, sort of 67 kilowatt battery, you're looking, what, 10% worth of charge in the time that you're there, lucky. And if, because I mean, that's assuming 100% efficiency. So if you're not hitting that 100% efficiency rating, if it's cold or something else is going on, the you're not even getting 10% in the hour that you're allowed to stay there. It's kind of, It was a bit strange, and it was a bit, you know, if anyone's on just on 90, 80, 70% and they just want 10%, then that's fine, but they're going to be few and far between in terms of the grand number of people who will fluctuate probably between, you know, into waiting to charge between 50 and zero, depending on how dare-like they're getting. I mean, I'm going back to the States, and you don't work in the States, but the amount of cars, the Teslas that run out of energy over there is quite hilarious. What the thing is, it's not necessarily an infrastructure problem, because, you know, it has been proven you can do it. Someone's made a poor decision and openly does it. But then the thing is that that will make the news, right? The vehicles run out of energy.
What you've just said about having the 7 kilowatt in the wrong place, that's just about joined up thinking, isn't it? You know, it's kind of right charge point, right place, right time. It has to be thought that way, rather than, like you say, let's just chuck any old shizzle round here. You know, we'll just decide. You have to get data, don't you? You know, and you guys provide data in order to give people that ability to make an informed decision.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's taking that data through to an answer as well, because I think a lot of the people miss out the step and say, okay, well, I know what my demand is. Okay, well, I know it's a pub. I know they're going to stay here for an hour. I'm going to whack in a couple of 150s, and then say, okay, well, how many do you actually need? How many times is that going to turn over during an evening session? And how many times is it going to be used and not charging? So if someone sat in the bay, do you expect them to come move it, or do you want them to stay there and do it that way? And I think it's very tricky sometimes when you're talking with clients about how they want to deal with that. And one thing, we were working with a hotel client, and we were asking that exact thing. It's like, okay, it's a hotel client, and you've got in these charges, and people are telling them, it sends them a little message if they've overstayed too long. It's like, great, so you're going to tell your people at 2 o'clock in the morning that their stay is finished. Have to come move your car. It's like,
that's not going to happen, is it?
Exactly, no. And people, no, it wouldn't. And this is an exaggerated case, and I'm sure that, you know, there'd be workarounds it. But the point being is that sometimes you've got to use carrot and sometimes you've got to use stick. And you've got to work out the right way of doing it. And then taking that then forward into then the old energy things, I say, okay, well, I want my 6 chargers that are all 150. And then you look at your grid connection and go, oh, no, maybe not, maybe one of those. And it's like, well, hang on, because you're providing a service, you're providing, we know we're going to make a lot, you know, a revenue off of this potentially, or we can increase the revenue by X to then include a battery, which then you can run the chargers off, which means you don't need the big connection. So, or other systems, so on-site PV or something like that we can utilize, that we're able to then back up the infrastructure, or certainly improve it, not necessarily like completely provide all 6, but we might be able to provide them 4 of the 6 rather than 1 of the 6, and do it that way. And we work out, you know, in a virtual environment, what you're able to install. And that's really the critical bit of what we do, that whole sort of stage right through to, okay, it's in the ground.
Right, okay. So you're kind of working across all of the areas then, aren't you? You're kind of in pre, sort of like in the sort of like the you're even before the site survey, aren't you, I suppose, because you're doing the initial kind of pre-survey, and then kind of going all the way through, aren't you, right through to installation. And then I'm assuming are you monitoring all this, are you working with the charge point operator to kind of monitor all that as they go through?
Yes and no. So we buy in EV data, which companies sell. So for those who are not aware, when you plug in a car into a thing, if you are signed up to certain terms and conditions, the data gets sold on. We buy that data to understand charge times. So this is the thing, always read the terms and conditions if you're not happy with that. So we're one of the companies that like buy in that data. We're not buying anything from like Facebook or anything, it's all legitimate sources.
I knew what you meant. Nothing dodgy.
No backhanded deals with certain big organizations. Thank you, Meta. We'll go into the detail. I can go into the details some of the time, but the principle of it is the fact that we can use this data to then improve and monitor what we do to improve our forecasts. But critically, with our kit, we provide more than one scenario. So we don't say, okay, you're going to need 6 charges in 2030. We say you're going to need between 3 and 7. And the current projection shows you in this line. But what we, what our reports enable our clients to do is adapt if that changes. So let's say that the there's a big pandemic again. You know, let's hope not, but let's say that, you know, and or something happens where we're not able, the, you know, EV infrastructure is hit, or supply chain is hit, or consumer uptake confidence is hit, or something like that. We'll account for that in our one of our scenarios, and then we're able to say, okay, well, actually, if this happens, drop this down to X level, or change it, or change your trajectory. And that gives our clients flexibility in terms of, we don't have a crystal ball, we can't tell you exactly what's going to happen in the future, but we can give you a guide. It's going to be between here and here. So yeah, okay. that's really where we come from with that.
So it sounds like you're doing a load of stuff that kind of is going to be really, really beneficial for everybody. So who, if you knew that your ideal client was watching or listening to this, who would that be?
Oh, I mean, depends on what you mean. An ideal client is one that pays well. throwing the boat out there to anyone who's a consultant, they'll know exactly what I mean by that. I mean, in terms of, like, we want to cover the biggest basis. We want clients who know they've got big overturn, who can, you know, act as community centers, who can really help make those big changes in the sort of neighborhoods around them. So if you know you're in a constrained area, you're thinking, okay, well, you know, London Borough is an example, and you've got, okay, well, I've got a bit of spare space out back or something like that, or I want to use as a residential charging hub, and I'm going to put some gates on it, I'm going to put a camera on it, I'm going to say, look, charge your car here overnight or something, you can walk home. That kind of thing is, you know, really what we can help with. But then if likewise, if you're a portfolio client and you're thinking, I want to make sure I provide for my customers, or hotel clients that make sure I provide for my customers, and I want to make sure I'm actually providing for my customers to my benefit, that's also, again, we can look at that for you and look at that in detail, because again, it's about the convenience thing. It sounds really selfish when you sound it. It's like, you know, I want to think of my customers, but they're coming to that for a reason. You know, it's not about them making more money, or it's about them making sure they supply the people who use it to make sure, because if you, for example, this is an example I use all the time, if hotels don't have EV charging points, right, some people are thinking, well, I don't want to buy an EV, because when I go on holiday or I try and use a hotel for business or whatever, they don't seem to have EV charging points. I have no guarantee that there's EV charging points. It's like, okay, well, now I want to work with a hotel because they've missed out on a hotel sale there, or if that person has an EV because they've gone somewhere else that does have an EV charging point, or they're not taking, people aren't uptaking EV because it's not convenient for them.
Yeah.
And that's the real like crux of the matter, is that you've got to make it convenient across everywhere. So if you have people driving to your site, you need to talk to us. Because, you know, we can tell you exactly how many charging points you should have, if any, and really go down that route and then go from there. Because again, it's not a numbers game. So sometimes the answer is zero. You know, sometimes the answer is they don't stay long enough. They don't, you know, you've got an hour restriction on your car park, or people stay for 15 minutes, and you know, you don't have the power or space to be able to put in massive high power charges. So the answer is none for you, unfortunately, but down the road you've got, you know, X amount that you can put in a warehouse or something for your vans or for your lorries, etc., and things like that. So
Okay, and so the website, if people are looking for it, is hydrock.com, with hydrock being OCK, isn't it, .com?
Yes, and then you can navigate to our StratEV page from there. So it's hydrock.com/ I think it's electric vehicle modeling, I think, underneath it. But if you go to the homepage, so hydrock.com, and there's Revolution Electric Vehicle Modeling. If you click on that one, that leads you to the StratEV page, and that will show you some of our models and some of the bits and pieces. And my contact details are on there. So if you want to to message me, find me on LinkedIn, then please do, because I'm quite responsive. So if you want to, you know, ask a question or say, you know, I heard you on a podcast, you were talking rubbish for like 15 minutes, I'll be glad to have that conversation. Because I love, my favorite conversations are where people disagree with me. And as again, it's going back to that. I'm one of these people that's like, yeah, I'm up to listen and change an opinion. If you want to, you know, I'm happy to debate your point of view and quite, you know, we had a great one. I just sort of last point, but the we were exhibiting at Cenex, and we were displaying our autonomous vehicle tool, and someone came up and said, right, okay, well, you're saying about all these autonomous vehicles are great and stuff, but what happens when it meets roadworks? What's it going to do then? Because it's not mapped anywhere and things like that. And it's like, you know, it's like off the top of my head, I was just like, look, to be honest, I'm not, you know, anyone with roadworks, but it wouldn't take a manner of genius to put a little transponder out that said reduce speed to 15 kilometers or this is the new map for this area, and get it to override and do things like that. And he was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that's all right. And then, but then he was also talking about things like, you know, autonomous vehicles in the next like 10-15 years, do you see it? And I was like, to be honest, not as a mass scale, no. Because you've got so many problems in the fact that the road network is built upon human drivers, and everything is built for is human related, to then go in and whack all of the infrastructure in and out to, and then take it all out to now be relevant for calves. It's not looking likely that short time frame. So yeah, he had some points, I had some points, and it was a really good conversation. So yeah, if anything like that, if you disagree, I'd be more keen to hear from you than someone that just goes, yeah, thumbs up, that was good.
As long as you're not like my father-in-law who just likes to have people emailing him for an argument. So that's
oh, not like that. No. Although it's quite funny. The reason I'm so attached to this is my dad is, he works for a chemical company, and he's massively anti-EV at the moment, because he works a lot with lithium itself, right. And very correct, and again I agree with him in this, makes the point that there isn't enough lithium in the world to make every car an EV. That just isn't fact, right? That's I can't argue that opinion of it, or not even opinion of his. That is a fact from his end. My argument, obviously, back to that is that yes, there isn't, but that's to say that the petrol that we use now in our cars is not the same petrol we used that long ago, you know, when the car was first invented. So we can change it, we can manipulate it, and there are different, you know, we're all constantly ever evolving ways of storing energy. So the hydrogen fuel cell thing is a big thing as well. So, you know, is that, you know, does that come about later on when lithium is more scarce, or do we change it and have a different, you know, sodium, like I said, with the Japanese the Japanese inventors over there talking about sodium based batteries and carbon based batteries, I think, in the US. So all those kind of changes, all very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. But listen, thank you ever so much for talking to me. It's been really, really interesting having this conversation, and hopefully everybody's kind of enjoyed listening to you or watching you. But don't email him for an argument, but you can email him for a chat. And I'll make sure that I share your details on the show notes of the podcast anyway.
But yeah, please do, yeah.
I will say thank you ever so much. And to everybody else, I'm going to say thank you for listening and watching. I shall see you next time. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Electric Evolution with Liz Allen. If you want to find out more about Full Circle Continuous Improvement, please visit us at www.fullcircleci.co.uk. Don't forget to keep listening for more episodes coming up really soon.